life sentences and literary aspirations do not usually go hand in hand. Chris Rodriguez is serving a life sentence for second-degree murder at the Greenhaven Correctional Facility in New York. He was tried and convicted at age 15. So far, he spent more than 18 years behind bars. He told Steve Paulson that prison life has a unique culture all its own, a culture of unspoken rules and regulations, and consequences. Here's Rodriguez reading from his essay, Reunion, in the book Undoing Time, American Prisoners in Their Own Words.
Spanky, this is someone from your past. I've been looking for you since 88, kiddo. Please come to the yard Saturday morning, and I'll tell you all about it. I'll be with Gotti, 50 Lincoln. Thus read the anonymous note I found on my bed late one Friday evening. The last time anyone has addressed me as Spanky was over 15 years ago, during a period in my life when I was an ultra-delinquent Puerto Rican kid from Brooklyn who gave the term juvenile delinquency new meaning. I knew it could be only one person who wrote the note. In spite of my educated guess that it could be none other than Anthony Laveri, my childhood friend and former partner in crime, I arranged to have several men I know arm and position themselves around the recreation yard to watch my back in the event that I guessed wrong and was being set up for a surprise attack by an unknown enemy. All Friday night, I wrestled with the fact that I had to go out to the yard the following day, armed, ready to kill someone who may be out to get me. I woke Saturday morning filled with anxiety, not knowing what kind of situation I was going to confront in the yard in less than an hour. Over the years, I had witnessed countless men stabbed, sliced, hit over the head with free weights, and extorted to no end. And here I was about to go out into the very same yard I so despised, possibly to stab someone. Sure, I could easily not go out to the yard, but then what would I do? There is no place to hide in prison.
So what did you do then? Did you just walk up to him?
Yeah, basically I just walked up to him. I said, excuse me, is your name Anthony? And he just stared at me and I stared at him and he just brought his hand up toward my cheek and, like, brushed it and said, what's up, Spank? Like, you know, like, something to that effect. No, I was like, wow. I was speechless, frankly. You know, I was, like, stunned. You know, it was amazing. It was an amazing encounter.
So was this a good experience? Did you like seeing him again after all these years?
Well, you know, because I know I've changed. I know that. I really didn't know what to expect. I knew that, okay, here's Anthony Laveri. He's here. I mean, he's a part of my past. You know, he's part of my childhood. During the period of my childhood, when I went through bad and good, he was basically there. You know, he slept over my house. I slept over his. We were good friends. But then seeing him now, I didn't know what to expect. You know, I mean, I know who I am today, but I don't know who he is today. So as I got to see what kind of person he did become, he wasn't quite the person that I would befriend today. He was very different, you know. Whereas I've, you know, and I hate to say it this way, whereas I've grown intellectually, he had, you know, he had not. And, well, you know, people change.
I want to ask you some about what life is like in prison, because I guess I assume that you are living in a totally controlled environment. I mean, even this phone conversation we're having right now is being listened to. Can you give me some sense of how life on the inside is controlled, how your life is controlled day to day?
Well, prison, you know, obviously because of what it is, it's completely different from a free society, but it has its rules and regulations. My life is controlled in the sense that I have no control over when I'm permitted to attend the programs that I attend. There's a set time for that. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner, there's a set time for that. When I can or cannot use the phone, there's a set time. When I have to lock in for the night, which is at 10:15 at night, meaning lock in my cell and cells, you know, were confined overnight. When I can or cannot receive a visit, when I can or cannot go to the recreation yard. It's controlled. I mean, basically everything. You know, but the one thing that's not controlled, which I would never allow the system to control, my thoughts and my thinking.
Mm-hmm. Now, all those things that you mentioned are essentially the rules of the prison.
Yes.
You know, what you've got to do, when you can do it, when you can't do things. What about kind of the informal rules of control that I assume the prisoners themselves have? Is there a lot going on there? I mean, sort of things that you know you need to do?
Yes. As prisoners, there's an implicit understanding, and I guess, you know, explicit understanding as well, that one, when we're walking down, say, a cell block or a gallery or a company, all the same thing, one looks directly ahead until you reach your destination. Meaning, if I'm going to go see a guy who's in 15 cell, I don't walk down the company staring into people's cells because I'm violating their privacy. And we really don't have privacy to begin with. So the little bit of privacy that we do have or can establish amongst ourselves, we try to respect that. Another thing is that many things in society that perhaps many people overlook or just take for granted, in here, we don't. Like common courtesies, respect. If two people are talking and you approach them, you say, pardon me or excuse me. And then when, you know, given the nod to speak, or say, or someone tells you, you know, speak, you just speak. Because in a prison setting, a common or little basic disrespect can be blown out of proportion and lead to violence. So a lot of guys understand that.
Does any of this change depending on who you are ethnically or socially, or sort of are all the prisoners subjected to these same kind of informal rules of conduct?
Okay, I'll give you an example of something. When we're in the recreation yard, right? Now you have in the yard weight courts, meaning they're little, maybe 60 by 60 foot squares. Now, how it works is like this. You got the whites, you got the blacks, you got the Jamaicans, you have the Asians, you have the Hispanics, and that breaks down even further because you have the Cubans, you have the Dominicans, you got the Puerto Ricans, and it'll break down even further than that. This group is from Brooklyn, this group's from Queens, this group's from Long Island, and it goes a little bit further than that. This is the Christian court. This is the Muslim court.
And you all hang out separately. I mean, there's no crossing over between those different groups.
Well, yeah, if given permission, like, because outside of the court, there's like a sidewalk, a walkway. So let's say I'm walking around the courts, and I'd like to speak to someone who's on the weight court. I'll just stop at the beginning of the court. Don't enter the court exactly, and I'll just summon him over. Or he'll just say, come over, and then I'll walk on the court. But if I were to just, say, walk on the Jamaican court or the Muslim court or any of the other courts without asking permission, that's like being disrespectful.
What would happen if someone does that, is disrespectful?
Of course, he'll be warned. There's no doubt about that. He'll definitely be warned, say, excuse me, you know, respect the court, you know, or who you'd like to speak to. Now, if the prisoner continues to do it, then perhaps it will lead to violence.
Is there much violence in prison where you are?
Surprisingly, there isn't, I should say. There's violence, but it's like more sporadic. It's not as common as the prisons farther north.
What about violence from the staff? Is that anything you...
Brutality?
Brutality, yeah. Do you worry about that, or does that happen?
Well, yeah. In the morning when I'm cracked out to go to work, my cell's open, rather, to go to work, I think about that as soon as I step out of my cell because, see, situations escalate. If I'm stopped and, let's say, put on the wall to be patted down, and for whatever reason I happen to lift my hand off the wall, that officer could interpret that as an assault attempt, and whoever else is with him there, because once he's patting him down, there's usually another one or two others standing there, you know, he could attack me, drop me to the floor, and, you know, quote-unquote, subdue me or whatever. That may not have been my intent, but anything could have happened. He could have told me to lift my leg, and in order for me to lift my leg up, you know, as my legs are spread, I would have to perhaps move my hand a little bit or something like that, you know. So that situation could lead to violence, because then now once an officer attempts to grab me or perhaps punch me in the rib or something, I'm going to react. I'm only human. I'm going to react, and then that can escalate, you know.
You're talking about how you've really got to be smart as you go about your daily business. I mean, you've got to keep your head on straight, otherwise you're going to get in trouble.
Yeah, basically that's it. You got to understand people, you know, as a prisoner. I have to take many things into account, try not to let things bother me. I have to overlook, ignore. Inside, I have to become numb to being treated inhumanely. It's difficult, but the ultimate goal is to get out. So I keep that in mind, and I try my very, very absolute best not to get involved with people who are engaged in illicit behavior, not to engage in conversations with officers who are ill-mannered or, you know, rough or have something to prove. And, you know, I just stay out of trouble, basically.
Steve Paulson speaking with Chris Rodriguez about his essay Reunion from the book Undoing Time, American Prisoners in Their Own Words. Rodriguez is serving a life sentence for second-degree murder. He's up for parole in 2003.